hidden, he answered. As you wish, I care not, said Boromir. Yet may I not even speak of it, for you seem ever to think only of its power in the hands of the enemy, of its evil uses, not of its good. The world is changing, you say. Minas Tirith will fall if the ring lasts. But why? Certainly, if the ring were with the enemy. But why if it were with us?
Were you not at the council, answered Frodo, because we cannot use it, and what is done with it turns to evil.
Boromir got up and walked about impatiently.
So you go on, he cried. Gandalf, Elrond, all these folk of torture to say so. For themselves they may be right. These elves and half-elves and wizards, they would come to grief, perhaps. Yet often I doubt if they are wise and not merely timid. But each to his own kind. True-hearted men, they will not be corrupted. We of Minas Tirith have been staunch through long years of trial. We do not desire the power of wizard lords, only strength to defend ourselves, strength in a just cause. And behold, in our need, chance brings to light the ring of power. It's a gift, I say, a gift to the foes of Mordor. It's mad not to use it, to use the power of the enemy against him. The fearless, the ruthless, these alone will achieve victory. What could not a warrior do in this hour, a great leader? What could not Aragorn do? Or if he refuses, why not Boromir? The ring would give me power of command. How I would drive the hosts of Mordor, and all men would flock to my banner.
Boromir strode up and down, speaking ever more loudly. Almost he seemed to have forgotten Frodo, while his talk dwelt on walls and weapons and the mustering of men, and he drew plans for great alliances and glorious victories to be, and he cast down Mordor, and became himself a mighty king, benevolent and wise. Suddenly he stopped and waved his arms.
"And they tell us to throw it away," he cried. "I do not say destroy it. That might be well, if reason could show any hope of doing so. It does not. The only plan that is proposed to us is that a halfling should walk blindly into Mordor and offer the enemy every chance of recapturing it for himself. Folly. Surely you see it, my friend," he said, turning now suddenly to Frodo again. "You say that you're afraid. If it's so, the boldest should pardon you. But is it not really your good sense that revolts?"
"No, I'm afraid," said Frodo, "simply afraid. But I'm glad to have heard you speak so fully. My mind is clearer now."
"Then you will come to Minas Tirith?" cried Boromir.
His eyes were shining and his face eager. "You misunderstand me," said Frodo.
"But you will come, at least for a while," Boromir persisted. "My city is not far now, and it's little further from there to Mordor than from here. We've been long in the wilderness, and you need news of what the enemy is doing before you can make a move. Come with me, Frodo," he said. "You need rest before your venture, if go you must."
He laid his hand on the hobbit's shoulder in friendly fashion, but Frodo felt the hand trembling with suppressed excitement. He stepped quickly away and eyed with alarm the tall man, nearly twice his height and many times his match in strength.
"Why are you so unfriendly?" said Boromir. "I'm a true man, neither thief nor tracker. I need your ring. That you know now. But I give you my word that I don't desire to keep it. Will you not at least let me make trial of my plan? Lend me the ring."
"No, no," cried Frodo. "The council laid it upon me to bear it."
"It's by our own folly that the enemy will defeat us," cried Boromir. "How it angers me. Fool, obstinate fool, running willfully to death and ruining our cause. If any mortals have claim to the ring, it is the men of Numenor and not halflings. It is not yours save by unhappy chance. It might have been mine. It should be mine. Give it to me."
Frodo did not answer, but moved away till the great flat stone stood between them.
"Come, come, my friend," said Boromir in a softer voice. Why not get rid of it? Why not be free of your doubt and fear? You can lay the blame on me, if you will. You can say that I was too strong and took it by force. For I'm too strong for you, halfling," he cried,
and suddenly he sprang over the stone and leapt at Frodo. His fair and pleasant face was hideously changed. A raging fire was in his eyes. Frodo dodged aside and again put the stone between them. There was only one thing he could do. Trembling, he pulled out the ring upon its chain and quickly slipped it on his finger, even as Boromir sprang at him again. The man gasped, stared for a moment amazed, and then ran wildly about, seeking here and there among the rocks and trees.
"Miserable trickster!" he shouted. "Let me get my hands on you. Now I see your mind. You will take the ring to Sauron and sell us all. You have only waited your chance to leave us in the lurch. Curse you and all halflings to death and darkness."
Then, catching his foot on a stone, he fell sprawling and lay upon his face. For a while he was as still as if his own curse had struck him down. Then suddenly he wept. He rose and passed his hand over his eyes, dashing away the tears.
"What have I said?" he cried. "What have I done, Frodo? Frodo," he called, "come back. A madness took me, but it has passed. Come back."
There was no answer. Frodo did not even hear his cries. He was already far away, leaping blindly up the path to the hilltop. Terror and grief shook him, seeing in his thought the mad, fierce face of Boromir and his burning eyes. Soon he came out alone on the summit of Armon Hen and halted, gasping for breath. He saw, as through a mist, a wide flat circle, paved with mighty flags and surrounded with a crumbling battlement, and in the middle, set upon four carven pillars, was a high seat, reached by a stair of many steps. Up he went and sat upon the ancient chair, feeling like a lost child that had clambered upon the throne of mountain kings. At first he could see little. He seemed to be in a world of mist in which there were only shadows. The ring was upon him. Then here and there the mist gave way, and he saw many visions, small and clear, as if they were under his eyes upon a table, and yet remote. There was no sound, only bright living images. The world seemed to have shrunk and fallen silent. He was sitting upon the seat of seeing, on Armon Hen, the hill of the Eye of the Men of Numenor. Eastward he looked into wide, uncharted lands, nameless plains, and forests unexplored. Northward he looked, and the great river lay like a ribbon beneath him, and the misty mountains stood small and hard as broken teeth. Westward he looked, and saw the broad pastures of Rohan and Orthanc, the pinnacle of Isengard, like a black spike. Southward he looked, and below his very feet the great river curled like a toppling wave and plunged over the falls of Rauros into a foaming pit. A glimmering rainbow played upon the fume.
And Aethir Anduin he saw, the mighty delta of the river, and myriads of seabirds whirling like a white dust in the sky, and beneath them a green and silver sea rippling in endless lines. But everywhere he looked he saw the signs of war. The misty mountains were crawling like anthills. Orcs were issuing out of a thousand holes. Under the boughs of Mirkwood, there was a deadly strife of elves and men and fell beasts. The land of the Beornings was aflame. A cloud was over Moria. Smoke rose on the borders of Lorien. Horsemen were galloping on the grass of Rohan. Wolves poured from Isengard. From the havens of Harad, ships of war put out to sea. And out of the east men were moving endlessly, swordsmen, spearmen, bowmen upon horses, chariots of chieftains and laden wains. All the power of the Dark Lord was in motion. Then, turning south again, he beheld Minas Tirith. Far away it seemed, and beautiful, white-walled, many-towered, proud and fair upon its mountain seat. Its battlements glittered with steel, and its turrets were bright with many banners. Hope leapt in his heart, but against Minas Tirith was set another fortress, greater and more strong. Thither, eastward,
Unwilling, his eye was drawn. It passed the ruined bridges of Osgiliath, the grinning gates of Minas Morgul, and the haunted mountains, and it looked upon Gorgorath, the valley of terror in the land of Mordor. Darkness lay there under the sun. Fire glowed amid the smoke. Mount Doom was burning, and a great reek rising. Then at last his gaze was held. Wall upon wall, battlement upon battlement, black, immeasurably strong, mountain of iron, gate of steel, tower of adamant, he saw it, Barad-dûr, fortress of Sauron. All hope left him. And suddenly he felt the eye. There was an eye in the dark tower that did not sleep. He knew that it had become aware of his gaze. A fierce, eager will was there. It leaped towards him, almost like a finger. He felt it, searching for him. Very soon it would nail him down, know just exactly where he was. Arm on claw it touched. It glanced upon Tol Brandir. He threw himself from the seat, crouching, covering his head with his grey hood. He heard himself crying out, "Never, never!" Or was it, "Verily I come to you!" He could not tell. Then, as a flash from some other point of power, there came to his mind another thought. "Take it off! Take it off! Fool, take it off! Take off the ring!" The two powers strove in him. For a moment, perfectly balanced between their piercing points, he writhed, tormented. Suddenly he was aware of himself again. Frodo, neither the voice nor the eye, free to choose, and with one remaining instant in which to do so, he took the ring off his finger. He was kneeling in clear sunlight before the high seat. A black shadow seemed to pass like an arm above him. It missed Armon Hen and groped out west and faded. Then all the sky was clean and blue, and birds sang in every tree. Frodo rose to his feet. A great weariness was on him, but his will was firm and his heart lighter. He spoke aloud to himself. "I will do now what I must," he said. "This at least is plain. The evil of the ring is already at work even in the company, and the ring must leave them before it does more harm. I'll go alone. Some I cannot trust, and those I can trust are too dear to me. Poor old Sam, and Merry and Pippin. Strider, too. His heart yearns for Minas Tirith, and he will be needed there, now Boromir has fallen into evil. I will go alone. At once." He went quickly down the path and came back to the lawn where Boromir had found him. Then he halted, listening. He thought he could hear cries and calls from the woods near the shore below. "They'll be hunting for me," he said. "I wonder how long I have been away. Hours, I should think." He hesitated. "What can I do?" he muttered. "I must go now, or I shall never go. I shan't get a chance again. I hate leaving them, and like this without any explanation. But surely they'll understand. Sam will. And what else can I do?" Slowly he drew out the ring and put it on once more. He vanished and passed down the hill, less than a rustle of the wind. The others remained long by the riverside. For some time they had been silent, moving restlessly about, but now they were sitting in a circle and they were talking. Every now and again they made efforts to speak of other things, of their long road and many adventures. They questioned Aragorn concerning the realm of Gondor and its ancient history, and the remnants of its great works that could still be seen in the strange borderland of the Emmenweald. The stone kings, and the seats of Hlor and Hen, and the great stair beside the falls of Rauros. But always their thoughts and words strayed back to Frodo and the ring. What would Frodo choose to do? Why was he hesitating?
"He's debating which course is the most desperate, I think," said Aragorn. "And well he may. It's now more hopeless than ever for the company to go east, since we have been tracked by Gollum, and must fear that the secret of our journey is already betrayed. But Minas Tirith is no nearer to the fire and the destruction of the burden.
We may remain there for a while and make a brave stand, but the Lord Denethor and all his men cannot hope to do what even Elrond said was beyond his power, either to keep the burden secret or to hold off the full might of the enemy when he comes to take it. Which way would any of us choose in Frodo's place? I don't know. Now, indeed, we miss Gandalf most. Grievous is our loss, said Legolas. Yet we must needs make up our minds without his aid. Why cannot we decide and so help Frodo? Let us call him back and then vote. I should vote for Minas Tirith.
And so should I, said Gimli. We, of course, were only sent to help the bearer along the road, to go no further than we wished, and none of us is under any oath or command to seek Mount Doom. Hard was my parting from Lothlorien, yet I have come so far, and I say this. Now we have reached the last choice. It is clear to me that I cannot leave Frodo. I would choose Minas Tirith, but if he does not, then I follow him.
And I, too, will go with him, said Legolas. It would be faithless now to say farewell.
It would indeed be a betrayal if we all left him, said Aragorn. But if he goes east, then all need not go with him, nor do I think that all should. That venture is desperate, as much so for eight as for three or two or one alone. If you would let me choose, then I should appoint three companions. Sam, who could not bear it otherwise, and Gimli, and myself. Boromir will return to his own city, where his father and his people need him, and with him the others should go, or at least Meriadoc and Peregrin, if Legolas is not willing to leave us.
That won't do at all, cried Merry. We can't leave Frodo. Pippin and I always intended to go wherever he went, and we still do. But we didn't realize what that would mean. It seemed different so far away, in the Shire or in Rivendell. It would be mad and cruel to let Frodo go to Mordor. Why can't we stop him?
We must stop him, said Pippin. And that is what he's worrying about, I'm sure. He knows we shan't agree to his going east, and he doesn't like to ask anyone to go with him, poor old fellow. Imagine it, going off to Mordor alone. Pippin shuddered. But the dear, silly old hobbit, he ought to know that he hasn't got to ask. He ought to know that if we can't stop him, we shan't leave him.
Begging your pardon, said Sam, I don't think you understand my master at all. He isn't hesitating about which way to go. Of course not. What's the good of Minas Tirith anyway? To him, I mean, begging your pardon, Master Boromir, he added, and turned. It was then that they discovered that Boromir, who at first had been sitting silent on the outside of the circle, was no longer there. Now where's he got to? Cried Sam, looking worried. He's been a bit queer lately, to my mind, but anyway he's not in this business. He's off to his home, as he always said, and no blame to him. But Mr. Frodo, he knows he's got to find the cracks of Doom, if he can. But he's afraid. Now it's come to the point he's just plain terrified. That's what his trouble is. Of course, he's had a bit of schooling, so to speak, we all have, since we left home, or he'd be so terrified he'd just fling the ring in the river and bolt. But he's still too frightened to start, and he isn't worrying about us either, whether we'll go along with him or no. He knows we mean to. That's another thing that's bothering him. If he screws himself up to go, he'll want to go alone, mark my words. We're going to have trouble when he comes back, for he'll screw himself up all right, as sure as his name's Baggins.
I believe you speak more wisely than any of us, Sam, said Aragorn. And what shall we do, if you prove right?
Stop him! Don't let him go, cried Pippin.
I wonder, said Aragorn. He is the bearer, and the fate of the burden is on him. I don't think that it's our part to drive him one way or the other, nor do I think that we should succeed if we tried. There are other powers at work far stronger.
Well, I wish Frodo would screw himself up and come back and let us get it over, said Pippin. This waiting is horrible. Surely the time is up.
Yes, said Aragorn, the hour is long past.